Blog Talk Radio.
Famous day, Bastille Day, today when the French peasants had enough of the outrageous behavior of the aristocrats, the Catholic Church, the clergy, and of course the Bourbon monarchy, not the stuff you drink. And among the birthdays, so they stormed the Bastille, which would be like the Alcatraz of France. A very isolated, not isolated, but it was in Paris. It was kind of a fortress, which the French people stormed and burned it, I believe burned it down. And also about that same time, Dr. Joseph Guillotin, later during the French Revolution, invented the guillotine, which he considered to be more humane. The last execution by guillotine was done in 1977. Now, the if you see the movie French swindler, Papillon, there was an execution of, using the guillotine of a French prisoner in the islands there. And, of course, you saw how it was done very quickly. Priests don't come out, and it's done within 15, 20 minutes. Excuse me. Now, they stopped public guillotines in France, but they continue to do them behind closed doors. Among the other birthdays today, another Frenchman, successor to Cardinal Richelieu. There were two cardinals who were the prime ministers of France. One was Richelieu, a very devious man, and then his successor, Cardinal Mazarin. Famous American painter, Whistler's mother, James Whistler, was born today. A woman suffragette, tried to get the vote for women in England, Emmeline Pankhurst. Famous Czech painter, Gustav Klimt. On the album, I think, of Gustav Mahler's on Deutsche Grammophon, you can see a painting by Gustav Klimt, which was used as the album cover. Today is Woody Guthrie's birthday also, and I think we'll get to that in a minute. And, of course, Gerald Ford, who was actually adopted. He's the first and probably only president to have been adopted, and his original name was King. Here is a clip from his inauguration.
Mr. Vice President, are you prepared to take the oath of office as President of the United States?
I am, sir.
If you will raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Gerald R. Ford, do solemnly swear.
I, Gerald R. Ford, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Now, today is also Woody Guthrie's birthday, and this is an appropriate song, this great American folk singer.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling. The voice was chanting as the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling, the voice coming chanting, fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me.
Now, also among the birthdays today, we have John Chancellor, great, very nice voice, born in Chicago. A lot of our media people are from the Midwest. So we have John Chancellor, we had William Shire, Chicago, we have Tom Brokaw from South Dakota. One of my favorite people was, not Walter Cronkite, but someone was from North Carolina, a real fine gentleman, and his name escapes me at the moment. Now, among the other birthdays, Polly Bergen. Among the deaths was great actor Preston Foster, and also yesterday was the death of the great American conductor, Lauren Mazel, who conducted many orchestras, made about 300 recordings, some of them very fine. He made the first black artists included in Porgy and Best, done with the Cleveland Symphony back in the 70s. That's a fine recording. And he was a musical diplomat. He brought the New York Philharmonic to Korea North Korea and played Gershwin and Dvorak and then the Korean music and, of course, the national anthem. The last time an American orchestra traveled to the communist countries was the Philadelphia, I believe, which went to China through the diplomatic channels opened up by Richard Nixon. Among the events today, in 1714, the Russian Navy, which was built by my favorite Tsar, Peter the Great, they defeated the larger Swedish Navy. Sweden was the major power on the continent in the 17th century. And then, of course, the British were supreme on the sea. British Navy, 1,000 ships, hearts of oak, as they called them. And, of course, Peter the Great realized that if Russia was to be a great nation, they had to be a seafaring power, and it's still a great navy today. I had fun when I interviewed some of the young future Russian sailors. There were cadets, and probably will be the future leaders of the what is now, I guess you could call it Russia, no longer the Soviet Union, since they broke up. And in 1789, they had Bastille Day, of course, in France. In 1798, would you believe this? There was a federal tax on slaves and that type of property. And I guess the marijuana people are looking for this. In 1832, the government exempted opium, which is a drug, from the federal tariff. Now, opium was made in India, was grown in India, and it was a felony, capital crime. You lost your, you were beheaded if you used it in China. Now, the British merchants decided they were going to open up China because China was closed to the West. And so what they did was they imported opium and got everybody stoned. And, of course, this may be what is happening here in the United States today. This kid up in Santa Rosa, the Garcia kid, I guess that's his name, a 13-year-old who had that imitation AK-47, looked like a real one, but it was just a toy, which he shouldn't have had. And it was discovered that at his autopsy he had marijuana in his system. And so that just goes to show you, and also all opening up all of these marijuana dens in poor neighborhoods, where you're going to get a stone population. This is the fear. In 1914, before Wernher von Braun, I made a mistake, it's 1914, the American scientist, Dr. Robert Goddard, invented the first liquid-propelled rocket. This was like 25 years before... Wernher von Braun, who later came over here before the Russians got their hands on him at the end of World War II. In 1921, this is a famous socialist historical fact, Sacco and Vanzetti in Massachusetts. These two immigrants, I don't think they spoke English very well, if at all, were accused in what was seen as a kangaroo and anti-immigrant trial in Boston, where they were accused of murdering the paymaster of a shoe company, and there's a lot of controversy even to this day as to whether they did it. And in 1953, during the Eisenhower administration again, a monument was erected to the great black scientist, Dr. George Washington Carver, founded Tuskegee Institute and found many uses for peanuts. And in 1976, Jimmy Carter got the Democratic presidential nomination. Now, I think it's appropriate. In the American Revolution, the French came to the aid for a lot of reasons, because they hated the English. And they were getting back to the English because the French lost the French and Indian War. De Gaulle came to America after 1944, when we helped liberate France. And here he is in the United States, and I think this is appropriate. He also came to San Francisco. So we will play this clip from our audio archives.
I want to thank again the American people for the magnificent effort which, under the leadership of your two great presidents, Roosevelt and Truman, has made possible the victory. Without you, Americans, there would have been no future for Europe and Asia. But a terrible servitude. There would have been neither freedom nor justice for the world. Long live the United States of America.
Now we're going to play that clip of Mazel. See if we can get it here. Mm-hmm. Here he is, Mazel, Lauren Mazel, part one. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Well, I think we have it here. Let me see. We should have it here. Here we go. Well, it should be here. And here we can play more because he's a great conductor, he was, and he did a lot for music. And we should appreciate everything people like him do to further the cultural heritage of the United States. And, of course, he was unusual because he was born in France. He was a great teacher, was a great musician. He's a child prodigy who played violin at the age of 7. And also Toscanini let him conduct, of course, once, the NBC Symphony Orchestra. And Toscanini was a martinet, a musical martinet. There haven't been any like him since. I remember my music teacher, when he was teaching me conducting, talked about Arturo Toscanini when he died in the 1957, I think it was. A lot of great conductors. And you don't see these likes anymore. These guys stayed with orchestras for years. Mazel had several in his 50-year career, over 50 years. He was started his career when he was 7. And he played the violin, and he had a fabulous memory. A lot of people didn't like him. This interview, which came from archives, I think is appropriate. He was also when one of the German soccer teams, I think it was the one where Mario Goditz was a team member, the guy who made the young kid who made the only score against Argentina. I think it's called Byron, what do you call it? Byron Munich Byron paid a lot of money. And of course, I'm trying to find this bloody thing. We always have this problem. And he was here. As far as our guy, Lauren Mazel, I think it's a very important interview. And, oh boy, we have this problem. Yeah, here we go.
I always see you described as a brilliant musician with a manner that is invariably referred to as, their adjectives are imperious, you know, formal. I think people are used to seeing you in a, you know, certainly in the concert setting. And then I see you here in jeans, sure. Right? And a much more relaxed person than I think people are familiar with. Is this you, or is this a way of letting down your hair, so to speak?
It's me.
This is you.
Yeah, what folks, for whatever reason, out there define me as is their problem, not mine. I know who I am, and if you use that word imperious to my kids, they would just laugh you off the property, because that's just not me. Mm-hmm. And So I suppose when I was younger, when I was much younger, being a young conductor in a world where only older people were accepted, I probably, like all young people, tried to make myself more important and to seem the kind of person that folks ought to take me more seriously. That's a long time ago. You know, the fact that I'm 40 years older than everybody instead of 20 years younger obviously has its effect on my personality, I guess.
I also saw that you're going to take up a new directorship in Munich in September.
That's
at
right.
age 82.
That's right.
So you are not in any way slowing down.
No, no. And then, you know, I have developed lots of musical friends along the way. There's the Vienna Philharmonic. I just celebrated their 50-year anniversary with them. Of musical interaction, 11 New Year's concerts televised live from Vienna, 500 concerts, and so forth and so on. But next year I'm going back to the New York Philharmonic, which I love. I was there as 7 years as business director. Mm-hmm. I'll be there for 2 weeks. I'm going back to the Met. I love the Met. I first conducted there in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time ago, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so looking forward to this Don Carlos series. It's an opera I adore. So I'll be not only in Munich, but you know, not forgetting my old friends,
mm-hmm.
and going to visit them. They would like me to come back. Obviously, I wouldn't dream of imposing myself upon them, but they seem to think that I can still cut the marmalade. So until such time that. That is no longer true. I'll be going about the world, also in the Far East.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be going back to Russia, where I haven't been in, I don't know, long, long time.
All right, now I do want to ask you one more question about where, before the camera started, we were talking about conducting. What you've learned about how one leads. You were saying that one actually has to learn to follow.
Well, as a conductor, I feel that I was extremely fortunate in coming from a family that had no means, which obliged me to earn my own living in order to put myself through college, right? So I joined the Pittsburgh Symphony at the age of 18, being a very good fiddler, and put myself through night school. I earned money during the day and went to night school until midnight every day.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of which, I found myself having to learn how to follow. And it was an interregnum in Pittsburgh between music directors, 3 years, and we had the world's most famous guest conductors. And I learned my craft at the other end of other people's batons. And I became a very, very good follower. And then I had years as first violin of a string quartet. And there's interaction with your colleagues. It's not quite sure who's following whom, and nor should one know, even though the first violin is obviously theoretically in a leading position. So all this experience taught me how to follow, and then I put all of this to use later on, and I could also understand the psychology of those who follow,
mm-hmm.
what it is that an orchestra musician wants really to have from a conductor. They're two very, very simplistic sounding rules, but very important. Conductors are there to conduct, not to make speeches. And two, they are there to give a beat that everybody can understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
So don't waste time with speeches and keep time for the music.
That's right. No choreography. Just do your job. Mm-hmm. Functional conducting. Obviously, there's a lot more to conducting and making music than that. But these are 2 points that I learned as a player. You know, when a conductor finally would appear on the podium who knew where the downbeat is and could communicate with clarity just what it is that he expected from each player, musically and technically, it was just like heaven.
Well, that was the late, great Lauren Mazel, died yesterday, kind of day before Bastille Day. And, of course, he was born in France of American parents, who had Russian Jewish ethnicity. And we're going to end, I think it's appropriate, with the salute to Bastille Day, the original version of La Marseillaise, conducted by the great French conductor who emigrated to the United States, Pierre Monteux. He emigrated, became a U.S. citizen during World War II, taught many American conductors. He himself also had played the viola in French orchestras before he became a conductor. A lot of these guys who are the great conductors were performers before they got up on the podium. A lot of them, it's very interesting, having studied at music school until I was injured, that one of the things I learned was that to look at these conductors, like Leonard Bernstein was very muscular, but he was a piano player. Lorne Mazel was a violinist, and it seems that there's entirely different styles. Not as the conducting doesn't seem to be as percussive. Fritz Reiner, the great Hungarian conductor, Jewish ethnicity, he had the vest pocket beat. He kept that, and that's what he said. That's how he controlled all his orchestras. And there was this famous story, getting back to Pittsburgh, where Lorne Mazel has played in the orchestra and later conducted. There was this string bass player. The string basses were generally, the way the orchestra is positioned, they're generally set in the very far back near the timpanis and the heavier brass. And, of course, it depends on the conductor and what the orchestra piece he's playing or conducting and how he wants it to sound. And guys move things around. Well, there was this string bass player who didn't understand Fritz Reiner's what was called the vest pocket beat. So he brought a telescope to one of the rehearsals, and Reiner fired him on the spot. Now, that was imperious. Of course, conductors in those days could get away with these things. Toscanini was imperious, and he was a cello player. And he made his debut in South America with the Straveling Orchestra, where the conductor was so bad they booed him off the stage. And Toscanini was in his early 20s, and he was brought on to conduct Aida. And then his star starts sailing right after that. During the World War I, Toscanini conducted the Italian army bands. He conducted in Bayreuth until Hitler came to power and he refused to go there. He also helped German Jews who fled to Palestine. Many were musicians, and they started the Palestine Symphony Orchestra, later became the Israeli Symphony Orchestra, another great orchestra. But Toscanini didn't like the way a musician was playing. He would smash the instrument over the guy's head. Now, you can't get away with that today. And unfortunately, we have a situation with some of our orchestras, or a few, especially here in San Francisco, where Michael Tilson Thomas, who was the son of the Tomaszewskis, who started these are Russian Jews, ethnics, who started the Yiddish theater in New York, and his uncle was the great actor Paul Muni. Anyway, Tilson Thomas is gay, and he pushes that agenda, and I think it's unfortunate. But anyway, this is San Francisco, and we've had some problems here before, racial problems. There was a timpani player, a black woman named Elaine Jones, and she was highly recommended, and the players didn't like her, and she got bounced. So, you know, liberal San Francisco does have these problems, and if you're not politically or sexually correct, you got a problem. Anyway, we will Pierre Monteux also conducted the San Francisco Symphony during World War II. So we'll end with his version of his interpretation of the original version of Les Marseillais, since this is Bastille Day. And we'll be back Wednesday at 3:30.
Yes, because I want really to play the official version, not any arrangement. Right?
Version Pierre Monteux, the great French-American conductor, recorded it as part of our archives, KLW Western Public Radio, the Amicus Veritas Broadcasting. It's Peter Paul Brizola. Happy Bastille Day. I salute, prosit, salute, au revoir, and we'll be back Wednesday at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time, and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. And yesterday we want to congratulate the Germans for a sporting event which was covered in San Francisco. The supporters of the German team, which played a great game, weren't rowdy. There wasn't any damage to property, and wasn't any urination in the street or anything that happened like what happened in Buenos Aires. I understand the Brazilians don't like the Argentinians anyway. There was, I believe, a war between Argentina and Brazil a long time ago. Anyway, good night. Stay safe.